Thank you for joining this afternoon's program of At the Root of It on the Heritage Radio Network, www.heritageradionetwork.com. Today is the 13th of April, and we are broadcasting our 48th episode of At the Root of It, nearly a year. And a thank you to our sponsor today's show, Fairway Market. What do you have in Westchester? Pelham, to be specific, that offers you free parking and under one roof the most enormous selection of organic fruits and vegetables, organic all-natural groceries, the finest butchers and prime and grass-fed meats and poultry on the earth, the most expertly chosen seafood, olive oils, and cheeses, and the lowest-priced national brands of standard groceries? You have Fairway. It's like no other market. Fairway is opening in Pelham this Wednesday, the 14th of April. For more information, go to www.fairwaymarket.com. And a thank you to our producer today, Jack Inslee, and engineer, Nat Wiener. And we're going to skip the Week in Wine recap and go straight to the phones, where I have a call-in to two guests who are in Chicago. Daniel Lorson, the Director of Communications for the Comité Interprofessionnel de Vin de Champagne.
Hello.
And also Paolo Russell Pinto, the marketing director of the Instituto dos Vinhos do Douro e Porto. Hi.
Hi.
Thank you so much to join us today.
It's a pleasure.
Now, both of you, I guess we'll start considering we have the introduction to the Center for Wine Origins, which from your respective positions, you are also a part of that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. You may ask, why this Center for Wine Origins and why was this center created? It was created, 5 years ago by the countries of Portugal and France and by the CIVC, the trade body of the Champagne region and the IVDP, the port region, simply because we thought and we still think that the location, origin are key issues in the world of wine today.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the American market is concerned, we want to protect, our purpose is to protect American consumers from mislabeled wines and educate them about wine location.
So the two regions which you're representing right now, or countries, Portugal and France, given the history of marketing and labeling of champagne and port in the past, these two countries, I imagine, were not picked for no particular reason. They were certainly picked given the history of the mislabeling which has happened in the past.
That's right. But I would like to point out that there are many other wine regions in the world, in Europe, in Australia, in America, who are also fighting to have their origin internationally recognized. In France, of course, wine places like Bordeaux, like Chablis, like Burgundy. In Spain, in Italy, in Hungary, there are many other wine regions whose location is key to understand the status, the quality, and the character of their wines. And in America now, some men of these regions like Napa Valley, like Oregon, are also developing that notion of origin.
Like, for what example would they be using to denote where their wine is coming from?
Well, if I understand your question, even Napa Valley nowadays is facing some problems regarding labeling around the world, and even in the United States. So that's why they're also feeling that the issue of the proper name of the origin or the region in the label, it's so important, because when you achieve a quality status on your wines, that may happen. People feel that they can use the name to state a region that or from an origin of the wine that doesn't exist.
Sure.
So that's why for us it's important to show people that we are challenging them to look for the real names of the origin in the labels, mm-hmm. regarding port, regarding champagne. As my colleague Daniel has said, there is also other regions around the world and in Europe, but also in the United States that face the same challenge. And our main goal is to educate the consumers when they go to the supermarket or to the retail store and look into the labels. They feel confident in purchasing their wines.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes other products, because if you feel that shrimp from Maine could come from Texas, it would be quite odd and strange.
Yeah. everyone's and, becoming
or
more
maple, Vermont maple syrup from Idaho. So
yeah.
It's this kind of things that we're trying to alert and to show people that they should trust on the labels that they see in the places where they buy their food and their wines.
Now, is there some sort of something on the label that denotes? Besides the AOC, or besides, I think most people or most of our listeners probably are most familiar with champagne and it being called sparkling wine or method traditionnel outside of the Champagne region. I think that has been given the most attention, I think, in the United States from a general consumer's understanding. Of saying for our listeners, Champagne has to come from the Champagne region, Porto from the port region. So some of the other examples which I've heard about recently at least have gained recognition, like Tokaj or Ferment in the Friuli region.
Chianti. Chianti Classic, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or even Rioja or Marsala or Sauternes And probably newcomers from new world regions will face the same problems in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is an international issue that is not only supported by the two countries, Portugal and France, but with us, we have now many more wine regions, Margaret River in Australia, we have South Africa, Cape Classic created their own name to designate a good sparkling wine made according to the traditional method. And they are not trying to misuse the name Champagne. They have their own
right.
They have their own name. Now, in Spain, think of the Spaniards. For decades, they used our name. They called their product Spanish Champagne. But now that they have their own name, they have never had it so good. So it's not only a question of truthing labeling, a question of good information for the consumer,
mm-hmm.
but it's also good for the producers themselves because they create their own identity and they cannot be considered as the poor man's champagne or the poor man's port. They are producing a different wine, a
mm-hmm.
different product, from a different terroir, from a different land,
sure,
soil,
so
subsoil, climate, and that's why the consumer has to know if he's drinking the real thing, a real champagne
mm-hmm.
from France or a real port from Portugal, and not something which is I wouldn't say an imitation.
Right.
It's a different the quality issue is another problem. We are not talking about quality. We absolutely respect the quality of American sparkling wines or of American so-called fortified wines. they are different. What we want them to respect is the name, which is a name from an old French province or an old wine region in Portugal.
Right.
That's our purpose.
You stated a very interesting point when you said that probably for the people that is hearing us, they already are comfortable with the term California sparkling.
Mm-hmm.
I think the question is also that California sparkling, as my colleague just said, is already gaining a name and a reputation.
Sure.
Regarding California sparkling. So why continue to use the word champagne for sparkling wines produced in California when even California sparkling is already creating their own reputation?
Yeah.
And I think that's what we are looking forward, is to see that more regions that face the same problem regarding the same names on labeling could be able to have their own region name on the label. For port, that doesn't happen yet, but we hope that we could achieve that in the future, and also alert people for this issue.
Well, I think it's great. It seems that it's something that, as you mentioned, with California's progress, it's something that happens over time. So your goals with the Center for Wine Origins, I'm sure, have kind of a long-term efforts that, you know, with this recognition, in time, we will be able to give more accreditation I mean, you're not working with the producers directly, though. I mean, in terms of encouraging the producers to really represent wines with their inherent character from that particular place and not mm-hmm. necessarily mimic wines from a more known region, do you work directly with producers and educating them that?
And showing them also that having their own name could be profitable for them in the future.
Right, right.
We have close contacts and relations with the associations of producers of the region regions we said in California, the Napa Valley Vintners, in the Walla Walla region, in the Washington State, Oregon State. I would say all the states that are producing very good quality wines at the moment,
mm-hmm.
and as their quality is also rising up, they feel the need to have their own location attached to the wines they're produced, the name of the location. So I would say yes, we have contact. We are creating this network through the Center for Wine Origins. Also through the what we call the Napa Declaration of Place, in which all the regions that Danielle said a while ago signed, stating that the name of the place where the wine is produced is a part of the wine itself. So we should protect names like Napa Valley, like Walla Walla, like Oregon, Washington, Sonoma County, Paso mm-hmm. Robles,
mm-hmm.
but also Port, Champagne, Sherry, Chianti, Tokaj,
sure.
and Rioja, for instance.
So that's... In 2010, as you move on with these different regions that are joining the cause, are there any pressing issues or any pressing region right now that is seeking protection?
Well, we are... making contacts with Long Island, for instance,
mm-hmm.
and of course now more and more countries interested in the new world, where they want to gain recognition, and they understand that as their reputation, as their image grows, they have more and more risks to be imitated and to be violated
mm-hmm.
as the classical wine regions that we were talking about a minute ago. So it's really an international issue for all wine regions where the producers want to create wines with character, wines with a particular image. We are not talking about, of course, about very ordinary or very mediocre wines. We are talking about the top of the range of the wines in any country. And this is very encouraging for us to realize that more and more countries and more wine regions are joining our signatories.
Yeah, congratulations on that. And you. Given your respective roles affiliating with Portugal and Champagne, I would like to ask you a few questions on those specifics as well. But we do need to take a short break, so please stay on the line, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
You are listening to the Heritage Radio Network, and my guests today, Paulo Russell Pinto and Daniel Lorson from the Center for Wine Origins. And we'll start with you, Paulo, in respect to Port, with your role as the Marketing Director of Communications for the Instituto de Vinhos de Porto. Seeing where we are now in the history, Port is one of the longest histories, I think, in the U.S., at least for just its recognition. So older generations have been drinking it for many years. And how are you looking at it today to appeal to a wider audience, including younger generations?
Yeah, well, that's one of our main challenges, the problem that port wine may be seen as a grandmother's wine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the United States is one of the countries that most changed the image of port since the mid-90s, especially when we started to have very good reviews on the biggest magazines.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that, for instance, Wine Spectator gave 100 points to two port wines in 2006 for the vintage 96 for the vintage 94. Sorry.
Okay.
And I think that also changed a little bit, started to change the image of port, and moving it from the grandmother's wine to a more dessert wine. And I think nowadays in the trade and in the trade magazines, you see port positioned much more into the dessert wine category, and probably, as we heard some time ago, the king of the dessert wine category, than this old-fashioned image of port. So
mm-hmm.
I think all the trade, the Institute also, but all the trade is working to positionate port wine much into matching with food, into the end of the meal, and not as this wine to be consumed after the meal or before
right.
you go to sleep.
No, I think that's a good point. I think it's important to focus in on the trade and the people and on the floor. I recall having a few sommeliers or wine directors kind of come over to me and suggest a pairing of either sherry or port for a pasta dish once to really kind of cut through this rich jus of oxtail. And I thought it was such a brilliant pairing. So I think with that and thinking of it outside the box a little bit, not only for...
What is important
cheese.
Is also to show that port wine is very versatile. There is a lot of premium ports in different categories that can be very well matched with food.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our first aim to communicate. And this is also what we do, giving the port example to this Center for Wine Origins in order to show people not only about what we said ago on the first part of this conversation, but also showing port as a good example to show the origin of the product, the versatility of the product, the typicity of the product, and how it can be matched with the local food that you have here,
mm-hmm.
With the American cheeses, with the meat, the
Absolutely.
Fish
yeah.
that you have here that is awesome.
Have you seen any uptick or increase in popularity in port being used in cocktail creations? I mean, cocktails are so big and have been for the past several years. And I know there's some older classic cocktails that incorporate port into them. Have you seen any increased usage of that?
We're seeing not a lot.
Yeah.
What we've been discovering is that cocktails are coming into fashion again.
Mm-hmm.
Or they are here for quite
yeah.
a time now.
Mm-hmm.
But the classic cocktails didn't used to have ports. So I think new mixologists or this new wave of mixologists also look into ports to use it as one of their blends for cocktails.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say that I see it, but I would like to see more.
Okay, okay. Well, thank you for your thoughts on that. And then I'm going to direct the conversation back to Daniel Lorson to talk a bit about champagne. This is a basic question for people in the wine trade. But in terms of champagne and what it makes it unique, as we've talked about some of the California sparkling and sparkling wines from around the world who are establishing their own identity, what makes champagne so unique?
Well, the origin.
The origin, first
the
and
terroir,
foremost.
Mm-hmm. Of course. The very special climate, a climate which is continental. We have very cold winters, hot summers, but hopefully a regular rainfall for the plant to grow harmoniously.
Mm-hmm.
This is basic to the definition of what we call a terroir in the French language.
Right.
So this is something really very, very unique. And if you want really to make it very simple, I think champagne is unique for two main reasons. First reason is its capacity to age.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, there are exceptions, but in general, most of the other sparkling wines cannot age so well.
Yeah,
champagne.
Yeah.
It's
a
another,
fair statement.
Yeah. And maybe also when you taste blind and when you ask, is it champagne or is it sparkling wine? In many cases, what can help is the length on the palate,
mm-hmm.
the aftertaste, which is usually longer for champagne than it is for sparkling wine. But again, there are many sparkling wines today that can challenge champagne in general. But I'm talking of what are the two main differences that can be put forward when you want to differentiate champagne and other sparkling wines.
And I think when people are making other sparkling wines, I mean, even, you know, cider up in the northern part of Spain, Asturias and Basque Country, and different cavas, and when they talk about the second fermentation happening in the bottle, the method champagne was, you know, that really, when they talk about their product, sets that particular sparkling wine apart from, you know, a lower tier that they also make, given that second fermentation in bottle is what classifies it in a higher category.
Well, the bottle fermentation itself is not enough to make a great product.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, all those who have tried to imitate champagne have based their rationale on the fact that they used same grape varieties and they use the same method. But what makes the difference? The difference is based on the origin, on the terroir.
Mm-hmm.
Compare a Pinot Noir from Oregon and a Pinot Noir from Burgundy, Chardonnay from Burgundy and Chardonnay from the Margaret River, they don't taste the same.
Very though
they
true.
Are vinified approximately the same way,
mm-hmm.
and they come from the same grape variety.
Yeah.
In Champagne, really, we have a unique, we have unique natural conditions, natural environment, plus, of course, 3 centuries of experience. And also, but you already know that, but it is something which is very special to Champagne. We have decided to specialize in sparkling wines from the beginning of the 18th century. In no other wine region, big wine region, you have that specialization.
Right.
Most of the time you can find still wine, white or red or rosé or even sweet wine. But in our region, we have really specialized in sparkling wine.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that means something. After 3 centuries, that means that we really have... there is a joke about the comparison between champagne and the famous British lawn, and we say that in both cases we need a special soil, a special climate, a lot of care, and centuries of experience. That's probably...
No, I think that's all very good points. Thank you. And before the show, we were speaking a bit about a new lightweight bottle that Champagne Region was introducing.
Yeah.
Well, what is the reasoning for this?
Well, we have decided to go greener in many different directions. And the carbon footprint of the Champagne region has been carefully analyzed, and we know exactly where we can make progress to limit the impact of our region in terms of carbon emissions. And one relatively easy way to limit the quantity of energy to produce our bottles and to limit the quantity of fuel to carry the same quantity of bottles was to make a lighter bottle. But this lighter bottle had to have the same resistance to pressure, had exactly the same shape, otherwise we would have to change the bottle lines, the labeling lines, etc.
So how long did that take to start developing?
Yeah, well, in fact, the bottle... has existed for about 15 years, but we had to experiment it for a long period because many people keep their bottles for a long time. They transport it from one place to another, from the cellar to a port, from a container to another place in a warehouse, and etc. etc. And we wanted to be sure and absolutely sure that the resistance of the bottle and the appearance and the appeal to the consumer was good, because champagne is also a question of image.
Right.
But now that we know that it's a good replica of the ancient old heavy bottle, we have asked the industry to start using it as a standard.
And they have to, it's not necessarily a mandate, but it's a suggestion to the producers.
Well, for the beginning, no, but as soon as they will realize that most of their competitors really use it, there will be, we are pretty sure that in a matter of 2 years, probably everybody in Champagne will use it, except, of course, the special shaped bottle, like the Dom Pérignon or the crystal bottle. But for the what we call la bouteille champenoise, the standard bottle, which counts for 90% of the total production of champagne, in the course of 2 years, we will have the light bottle, and then with this new bottle, we will save thousands of tons of carbon, and it's a small step in terms of carbon emission, but it's also a very, very symbolic.
Yeah, absolutely. That's fantastic. Yeah. Great effort. So before we end the call, tell me what you both are doing in Chicago and then where you're going from there.
Ah, yes. Well, we haven't talked a lot about education, but of course, What we want to do with the Center for Wine Origins is to educate consumers mm-hmm. when they choose wine. And we want them to keep in mind that the origin of a wine is essentially key for their purchasing.
Right.
That's why we need educators, we need ambassadors, and tomorrow we are going to meet a group of ambassadors. We are going to spread the good word
to train
to
them, yeah.
many potential champagne and port consumers.
Well, Chicago's
and
a great market
we'll
to
have,
do that in.
We'll have, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tomorrow we'll have a seminar with these educators that we call ambassadors.
This group of ambassadors, it will have a nationwide impact.
Uh-huh.
So they're not only from
Chicago
although
I see,
we are
okay.
using Chicago as a base
yep.
to train them and to give them further information and detailed information on the two regions and what we want to do. In order for to use them in a good sense of the word,
mm-hmm.
to be our eyes and our hands regarding this sensibilization and this spreading the word about the location around nationwide.
Great.
Regarding if it's a podcast series that we're also going to do, training sommeliers and doing a sommelier accreditation program. And even preparing a retailer program that we hope that we will have a nationwide impact. It's something that we've been doing for the past 4 years, but we want to continue to do and to, if possible, to have even more impact regarding labeling and regarding showing the original product to the consumers.
And today we can count on 150 retail partners of the standard.
Uh-huh.
And we have already 250 high-profile experts in the food and wine world.
Excellent.
That we can call on.
Yeah.
And so that's a kind of network
right.
of people who really are
committed
and also who can speak about our wines, about the location, about the
goals, and
these good
mm-hmm.
messages,
yeah.
which without them we can't do nothing. We really need to have these allies, these champagne and port devotees, and these disciples, if I may say.
Well, I am one for sure, and I will look forward to seeing you on Wednesday.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Okay, yeah,
okay. And I'd like also for you to share the website of the Center for Wine Origins with our listeners.
Good.
What is that exactly? The website for the center.
It's www.wineorigins.com.
Okay. Fantastic. So they can go there to learn more about the efforts and when,
yes,
when you're coming
also.
Through their city to take advantage of these
mm-hmm.
seminars.
Exactly.
So
it also has pairing suggestions, information about the regions, and as you said, programs and things that we're going to do in the next days.
Excellent. Well, I appreciate your time today. Thank you again.
Thank you very much
Thank
for
you.
Receiving
Thank
us
you
in your program.
Playing.
Absolutely. And I will see you on Wednesday. Have a great stay in Chicago.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cheers. And thank you to our program coordinator, Jack Ainsley, and engineer, Nat Wiener, for today's show. And to our sponsor, Fairway Market, like no other market, who is opening up a location the 14th of April in Pelham, New York. See you next week. Cayó para exhibirte tal como es.